Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and it is my privilege today to be joined by Stephen Wirth, along with Carl Jaspers, the author of the recent book Blood Oath, subtitled The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson. This book was just published in soft cover by Rainbow Books, copyright 1996, and at the end of this interview, we're going to give some information about how to order the book. Stephen, welcome to our airwaves.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Stephen, you and your co-author have written a book about the O.J. Simpson case, something that has had a great deal written about it, but you have a very different take from most of the other writers that have approached the case, with the possible exception, in fact, with the exception of Stephen Singular, the author of Legacy of Deception, an individual I've already interviewed. Also, Donald Freed has a forthcoming book. These three books all have in common the thread that they talk about a conspiracy to frame O.J. Simpson. There are some differences in the various works. Your journey into the O.J. Simpson case began when you were contacted by an anonymous informant. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be contacted, a little bit about that informant, and how your book took shape?
Sure. Basically, we started to do some research on what appeared to us to look like something that was implausible the way the case is unfolding, and decided to look at, if not O.J., then who? And went back to some past knowledge about an attempted AME church bombing by a group of white supremacists who would benefit from something like this, because their intent was to start a race war.
And this was back in July of 1993.
That's right. At that attempted race war activity, which was also going on in Oregon and the state of Washington, etc. So it was all going on simultaneously. And the FBI themselves had confirmed that there was an attempt to start a race war, that it was a conspiracy. In fact, it's appeared in the newspapers. But we started to make inquiries and started to call, as a matter of fact, one of the federal prosecutors who was involved in the case, because it was mentioned that along with trying to bomb and machine gun the people at this AME church, there was a hit list that was put together on noted blacks, and we wanted to check whether or not O.J. Simpson was on that list. Yeah. In doing that, I think we inadvertently left ourselves open for a contact, because he gave us the name of a racist in Glendale, California, who I called and obviously at that time was able to obtain my phone number. It also may have come from contacts to the LAPD in tracking down the Christopher Report and the Colts Report that we were looking to obtain. But nevertheless, on April 24th, we received a phone call.
This, by the way, was April 24th of 1995?
1995.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
Received a phone call by somebody who wanted to know whether I was interested in finding out the true murderers of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. And I said, well, you know, here's an opportunity. Sure, I'd be interested. And he sent me on old Chase to a public telephone, but one step before that. Once I got the phone call, that was followed by a little note that was kind of cut out from newspapers described April 19th bombing in Oklahoma, and that he wanted to get together with us. And then that was followed by me go chasing down to a phone booth, and it started from there on out, where I'd have to tell him where I was going to be, and he would call me at public telephones around the country, because I travel quite a bit.
Let's stop just for a second, Stephen, and recap briefly what we've looked at, because we're going to be covering a lot of ground in a short period of time. You were looking into the planned bombing and massacre at the AME Church in Los Angeles, a major black church that had been targeted by a white supremacist group called the Fourth Reich Hammerskins, for a massacre. Basically, it was going to be bombed or firebombed, its residents or its parishioners killed, this in order to ignite a race war in the already very precarious racial situation in Los Angeles following the Rodney King affair and the 1992 rioting. As you began to pursue some of the evidentiary tributaries in connection with this, Eventually, your name came to the attention of an anonymous white supremacist who made contact with you shortly after the Oklahoma City bombing, and indeed he used the old trick of cutting out lettering from a newspaper in order to disguise penmanship or possible typewriter signification or matchup. He contacted you because he was apparently having some second thoughts about things he had been involved in. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, he, what bothered him was he had lost some friends in that April 19th bombing, and he decided he had had enough of it. He was, from what he told us, an ex-Vietnam vet, and he just had enough of all of this, and he did not want to see the plan go through. In other words, the plan of framing O.J. Simpson, and the original plan was to frame O.J. Simpson, and then once he was found guilty, which they were certain of, they would then come out with evidence on, including what he said, they had videos of this. So they were about to give him, at that point, you would, you know, since it was going to split the nation black and white, which is exactly what it did. I mean, they was like fortune tellers. They decided that, at least he decided he was going to stop it. And not only was he going to, after that, he was getting out of the country and never to be heard from again.
Now, this particular white supremacist who, in the book, along with all of the other members of this elite white supremacist strike team, we'll get to that in a second, was codenamed Skinner. You indicate in your book that your informant, although he wanted to interdict this plan to start a race war and a Fourth Reich in the United States, at the same time remained loyal to his comrades in the white supremacist movement and did not want their identities to be revealed either. You mention in your book that in addition to the aborted AME firebombing and massacre, this same group had been involved in the murder of Brett Kanter, a music producer whom O.J.'s defense team had cited as having been killed in almost identical fashion to Ron and Nicole, and they questioned why this murder was not investigated. And your informant maintained that that murder was indeed committed by this same group. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, in other words, the Kanter was involved with setting up, groups at different nightclubs, etc. He operated a nightclub, I guess it was called Dragonfly or something like that, with his brother. But they have this musical rawa. In fact, there's a large group of it in Detroit.
I don't know how it's pronounced. R-A-H-O-W-A, which stands for Racial Holy War.
Correct. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the wrong comments, and they made a pincushion at him and slit his throat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very, very similar to Helter Skelter, where, you know, nobody tied anything together with the LaBianca murders and the Tate murders, and that was started, those murders all were done for to create a race war also. I guess a lot of people forgot that, including Mr. Belusi.
There also are some interesting white supremacist and possible intelligence connections to the Manson affair. Veteran listeners to my program are familiar with that information. One of the things that I found most important about the information given you by, and we'll refer to him by his code name, since you never knew who the real individual was, Skinner.
No, we called him Skinner because he sounded to us like somebody would skin you alive and not think of another thought of it.
Yeah, so one of the things that comes through very clearly in your book is the deadliness and ruthlessness of the individuals involved. Now, Skinner was part of an elite. Well, we'll get to the composition of the team, but the goal of the Operation Thunderbolt, as this operation was called, was basically in the realm of psychology. This was, in effect, what is known in the intelligence community and the military as a PSYOP, a psychological operation. You mentioned that the goals of killing Nicole Brown Simpson, who in the eyes of the white supremacists, or we can call them Nazis, was a race mixer, a white woman of German extraction, no less, who had not only married and had children by O.J. Simpson, but was also being physically abused by O.J. Simpson, which enraged them still further.
That's correct.
The goal was to, as you relate in your book, to affect race relations and also the judicial system and even the way the police force was viewed by whites and blacks. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, the knowing the makeup of the LAPD and what was transpiring between the Rodney King and various other, the Colts report that showed a Viking group that was, even in the courts, found neo-Nazi groups operating within it, was to create a climate that would alter the way the court system worked, and then in essence follow plans that this group had to kind of destroy everything, destroy the normal court system, and at the same time break the groups up into taking sides, white and black, which is exactly what took place. In so doing, they could create the climate for their master plan of a white America. They were, you know, at this point, they've been fairly successful. We're getting these church burnings. We had all sorts of train wrecks that have been very, very mysterious, and just too many things that one could say is just a coincidence.
We're going to talk about the aftermath of the O.J. Simpson case, some of the things that have happened since that time, and by the way, including the Oklahoma City bombing, which, according to your informant, was the thing that sent him over the edge. Your informant, again, maintains that and appears to have been a Vietnam veteran with extensive combat experience and also extensive military and intelligence skills. The killings of Ron and Nicole, plus the scenes of carnage coming out of Oklahoma City, reawakened some of the nightmares that he used to have after he came back from Vietnam. That, according to your informant, was one of the things that led to his change of heart. One of the things that's important, I think, about the revelations that Skinner gave you was the fact that the judicial system itself, as well as the police, were also targets for this operation. It was not only aimed at splitting the races, but also at discrediting and altering the judicial system and discrediting and alienating police from the population.
That's correct. Just like the Freeman group, where they're trying to, you know, separate it and put people in a mind of doubting whatever takes place in there. Again, they've been fairly successful. You've got in California now, they're trying to change, you know, instead of all of the jurors having to come out and say that a person is guilty, well, we'll just do it, 80% of them. And then maybe if that doesn't work, we do something else. They also follow a plan that seems to be laid out in the book called Turner Diaries, which is a racist book which McVeigh had in his possession and was apparently following, which had the plans for destroying a building exactly the way it was accomplished.
We're going to touch again on the Turner Diary, something that is familiar to this audience, later on in the interview, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned concerning Operation Thunderbolt, the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson, it also turned out to be Ron Goldman, a target of opportunity, and also a Jew,
right,
whom they killed not only because he was around, but because he was a Jew whom they hated. Operation Thunderbolt, you mention an elite or an operation, a psyop, literally a Nazi psyop, aimed at further dividing the races, altering and discrediting the judicial system, and discrediting the police themselves, as well as enraging the police and further affecting racial polarization within police departments, L.A. and elsewhere. You mentioned that Operation Thunderbolt had unlimited financial backing from an unnamed foreign terrorist group.
That's correct. And that group, we don't know, and that's something else about the way the group operated. They seem to have, like, a leaderless operation. They had one person that was just codenamed by us, Deliverer, because it kind of delivered all of the crucial parts to it.
A former high-ranking military officer,
that's
too.
Correct. That's correct. Who, at the end, seemed to have been done away with. One of the things is they did talk about this money coming from overseas, a rather substantial amount, because they were able to buy vehicles, the latest in surveillance equipment, which they used to their utmost benefit.
Yeah, they. We're going to talk about the intelligence methodology and technology involved here. We should note, however, that this was a terrorist group, described as a foreign terrorist group with unlimited financial backing, who apparently did in the Deliverer, that's the code name for the head of this blind cell, or the contact man between this blind cell and other operational units. When I say blind cell, this was a small highly trained white supremacist strike team, but it was part of a small cell connected to other cells in the operation only by this man called the Deliverer, who was subsequently dispatched. It is mentioned in the book that, according to the people in the strike team, the foreign backers of this operation became upset when they were conducting a race war in their own part of the world. This caused publicity problems, particularly with the United States, and then the Deliverer was done in.
That's correct. And again, not too much information was provided to us on, one, what the country or how much funds or any they did supply. That was all limited to us.
One of the suspicions I have is that the foreign terrorist group might have been a German Nazi organization. There are strong connections between international fascist organizations, and indeed the German Nazi elements had been conducting a very visible race war against immigrants and people of color in their own country, and this did cause problems.
Well, the one in our research, we came up with this Dennis Mahone, who was, in fact, is being questioned by the defense team of McVeigh about his traveling. In fact, he's been viewed as a foreign terrorist to countries outside, who has visited Germany and with their racist and terrorist groups, who has traveled around but also was on a campaign with the LAPD police department going back in 91, trying to get people to sign up for his group. At that time, he was just the head of the KKK in Oklahoma, in Tulsa. He then became in charge of Missouri and Oklahoma for the White Aryan Resistance Group, the one that's headed by Metzger in California.
Dennis Mahone had been recruiting, in addition to the Vikings group, a white supremacist group within LAPD that you alluded to, mm-hmm. He had been recruiting not only LAPD but also LA sheriff's officers into the White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan.
Correct.
You alluded to Judge Colts, K-O-L-T-S, and his investigation, which concluded that only a few officers had joined. Your informant gave you information that, in fact, that was not accurate.
That's right, that there were quite a lot. Well, in our investigation and checking, we discovered that there was an individual in the LAPD who was in charge of the computer programs and had access to files and was supplying that to neo-Nazis. He was looking on some well-known figures, and as a matter of fact, it's part of a lawsuit that was filed by someone who was running for public office. So there's apparently there's quite a group of individuals in the LAPD and the LA Sheriff's Department that could walk around with armbands and feel very comfortable with them.
There was a lawsuit in the 1980s where Western Goals, a right-wing intelligence foundation, was employing LAPD people to spy on people with whose politics they disagreed. Now, Dennis Mahone was recruiting LAPD and LA sheriff's people for his white supremacist group, also was traveling to Germany to do something quite similar, and your informants indicated to you that, in fact, Mahone and his compatriots had been more than successful in recruiting large numbers of L.A. law enforcement people into white supremacist groups.
That's correct. I mean, that's you don't have to go too far into reading some of the newspapers to find that there's some major problems there, and that unless we just have to take him out of the picture altogether, he's too closely linked.
And he also, again, is one of the people that is being investigated as being connected with Timothy McVeigh, and indeed Stephen Jones, McVeigh's attorney, has been trying to get information about international fascist networks involving, among others, Dennis Mahone. Now, we were alluding earlier to domestic Nazi groups with foreign backing, possibly German, in the case of this group. Oh, we should also mention the name for this highly trained and extremely well-organized and obviously altogether deadly underground white supremacist slash Nazi group. It was called CAUSE, or is called CAUSE, an acronym.
Right, the Christian Aryan Underground Special Enforces.
This group grew out of the Bruderschweigen. That was a Nazi group that manifested itself as, among other things, the Order in the early 1980s.
Mm.
That was a group which performed armored car robberies, a number of terrorist acts. Its best known act was the assassination of Denver talk show host Alan Berg.
In June of 1984, which made the assassination of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman the 10th anniversary, which was exactly what they were planning on. They were trying to get it as close as possible to June 18th. They got that fairly close to June 12th. They had to tie in a time when O.J. Simpson was going to be in L.A. In order to pull this thing off.
This group, in many ways, grew out of the order, which, according to an informant who had helped to interdict some of their operations, was receiving financing, according to an author named Peter Lavenda in a book called Unholy Alliance. They were receiving funding from, quote, German, that is, the order was receiving funding from, quote, German families in Latin America, unquote, probably some of the residual Third Reich elements down there. This audience has heard an interview with Steve Singular, the author of the book Legacy of Deception, who wrote a book called Talk to Death about the murder of Alan Berg, made into the movie Talk Radio by Oliver Stone. And interestingly enough, his anonymous informant within the L.A. legal system contacted him because of his work on the order. So you were told by your informant that this operation, Operation Thunderbolt, this Nazi psyop, murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and framing of O.J. Simpson, was timed specifically to, quote, celebrate, unquote, the 10th anniversary of Alan Berg's murder.
That's exactly right. They tend to do things on anniversarial dates. You can see that the April 19th dates, the groups, they pick dates. It's like Adolf Hitler's birthday. They started this planning on October 9th, which is Leif Erikson's birthday. They have this belief in Odinism with the Magic Nine. Throughout they relate to that and their blood oath of willing to kill without any thought of it.
And they definitely have a strong ritualistic and to a certain extent at least occult orientation. The L.A. Law enforcement officers who this group apparently had as part of their operational structure were intended to function in a number of ways with regard to Operation Thunderbolt, the murder of Nicole and the framing of O.J. Simpson. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, what they were assured of is that they were assured that, first of all, they had a mole inside the LAPD. They were getting information from somebody. But they're also assured, based on Garcetti's predicament, that there would be this kind of rush to judgment that Johnny Cochran talked about, that they would enhance, if they everything wasn't there, they would ensure, they would overlook things. And that's why this was able to be carried out so easily. There were just too many things. Even the prosecution team overlooked major things, and because of the fact that they were so sure that it was O.J. Simpson who did it.
You mentioned that in addition to leading the investigation in the direction of O.J. Simpson, that information about O.J.'s history of domestic abuse with Nicole, including the 1993 911 incident, was being channeled to this group.
That's correct. And not only that, but they had done some research. The 1989 incident was actually in the Chicago Tribune, which one of them had a copy of. The fact that he was always running late, ran and was on American Airlines was in another article, so they were aware of some of those things. Plus, somebody was giving them some pretty good information of what was taking place, and then they set up their operation where they were able to observe and listen to most of the things, tapping the phone and turning the system on and off at will, which also gave rise to the fact that there were no phone calls to O.J. Simpson during that whole period of time. That they couldn't substantiate any kind of alibi, which nobody's ever questioned. You know, he's made all kinds of calls. He's made them all on cell phone.
The insider, the white supremacist insider, the cause insider, I guess we could say, was codenamed the Dark German in your
book.
Correct. You speculate that it might have been, it could conceivably have been Mark Furman. There are indications pointing in that direction, and or other officers, possibly even a composite.
That's correct. I mean, we were never told who it was, but there were just too many strange things. One of the strangest that we found is that Mark Furman, in his actually direct by Marcia Clark, was asked, where was he on June 12th at 8 o'clock? And why she picked 8 o'clock, I don't know. But he said he was in La Quinta, California, at a police league meeting, and just before the barbecue, he left to go back home. The problem is, and we verified this, the barbecue was on Saturday night. There was no barbecue on Sunday. The meetings ended at general session 11 o'clock. So where was Mark Furman, and why did Marcia Clark give him an alibi for June 12th?
Indeed. I think that's one of the many very important questions you raise in your book. Stephen, we're almost at the end of this half hour. You mentioned also that your informant told them that they had white supremacist group had people inside of the coroner's office. They had forensics people who gave them information on some of the specific types of evidence they would need.
Well, actually what they had, and this again is linked to the April 19th bombing, there is a person called Colburn, who was, in fact, he may still be in jail right now. He worked at Cedar Sinai Hospital as a DNA specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Same hospital that O.J. Simpson went for his minor operation. Probably the same hospital that also handled previous blood. But nevertheless, he was picked up on a gun charge out of Oxnard. He worked there during the entire time that this trial was in previous, but left shortly after. And was picked up because he was a close friend of McVeigh.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how many coincidences can you have? You want to talk about circumstantial evidence. There's something strange that went on there.
Now, we should emphasize that the blood specialist was nicknamed Colby, which could have referred to a lot of different things.
That's correct.
This was an individual who was a militant member. Well, that's redundant. He was a member of this group CAUSE, this elite underground white supremacist strike team, was a blood and DNA specialist at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. His identity has never been established, but we should note, in light of some of the subsequent links to Oklahoma City that we're going to talk about, that the aforementioned McVeigh acquaintance Stephen Colburn was indeed a blood and DNA specialist at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in this time period, appears to have had those same types of political leanings, did know Timothy McVeigh, whether or not he was the Colby in question. We have been speaking for the last half hour or so with Stephen Wirth, along with Carl Jaspers, the author of the book Blood Oath, The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson, softcover edition Rainbow Books. We are going to be back in our next half-hour segment with Stephen Wirth. For Stephen Wirth, this is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.